You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM.
And finally, and we actually have three different finalies for you today. First things first, we're actually going to talk about TikTok. Now, I did a video slash podcast on this one the other day, but I think it's beyond an important topic, for one of my finalies for today. And so this obviously is going to be briefer than the full video and podcast I did. I do them daily, but this is so important. Here's what's going on. BuzzFeed's Emily Baker White had a really great article on this, and so I'm going to either be quoting or paraphrasing her heavily, not to mention my own thoughts, obviously, as I'm talking about this. Now, here's what's going on. According to leaked audio from more than 80 internal TikTok meetings, China-based employees of ByteDance have repeatedly accessed non-public data about U.S. TikTok users. ByteDance is based in Beijing. They've got heavy ties to the Chinese government. Chinese nationals in China are accessing your U.S. TikTok information from behind the scenes. Now, these recordings, which were reviewed by BuzzFeed News, contain 14 statements from 9 different TikTok employees, indicating that engineers in China had access to U.S. data between at least September of 2021 and January of 2022. And I say at least because obviously that is a time frame of the recordings, but I guarantee you they had access from the beginning and they probably still have access now. So there you go. Now, despite TikTok's executive sworn testimony in October 2021 Senate hearing that a quote unquote world renowned US-based security team was actually the one who decided to get access to that data, 9 statements by these 8 different employees describe situations where US employees had to turn to their colleagues in China to determine how US data was flowing. US staff did not have permission or knowledge of how to access the data on their own, according to these recordings. And from there, I want to pivot into basically more information that I touched on regarding China's laws over the collection of foreigner data. Since 2014, China's basically been blamed for a series of huge data thefts. They include individual records taken from, credit agency Equifax, 145 million records. They are also blamed for Marriott, 400 million, the health insurer Anthem, which is a Blue Cross Blue Shield provider, 78 million, the U.S. Office of Personnel Management for 21 million. They store sensitive files on U.S. government workers, including fingerprints and information security clearances. China's law basically says that if you are a Chinese-based company such as TikTok, aka ByteDance, out of Beijing, that the Chinese government gets access to all data on foreigners. There you go. And this is essentially what it is. TikTok, and I've said it for years, is a surveillance app for the Chinese state first, a stupid video app second. We need to really start waking up to this, and this is so unbelievably important. Recently, one of the FCC commissioners came out in late June, early July, and basically chastised Google and Apple for allowing TikTok to still be part of their app stores, respectively, even though they're violating so many terms of services. He requested that they give him in writing an explanation as to why by July 8th, those apps in both of those stores is still there. Now, while he doesn't have the full backing, he's one of multiple commissioners. This is basically a shot across the bow. I am hoping something happens with this. TikTok, again, is a surveillance app first for the Chinese state, a stupid video app second. And our next finally actually talks about California gun owners. Now, a data breach in the state exposed the personal information of every person with a California permit to carry a concealed weapon, according to authorities this past Tuesday, late June. Now, the California Department of Justice suffered this breach as part of its 2022 firearms dashboard portal, according to the Fresno County's Sheriff's Office, which said it was informed of the leak on Tuesday by California State Sheriff's Association. Quote, "This public site allows access to certain information. However, personal information of concealed carry weapon permit holders is not supposed to be visible. This includes, but is not limited to, a person's name, age, address, criminal identification index number, and license type, meaning standard, judicial, reserve, and custodial." Now, This breach affects, as I said, all concealed weapon permit holders in the state of California. The Justice Department now pulled down the dashboard site along with all related links after learning of the breach, but it's basically possible that some private information was stolen or posted online somewhere else. Quote, it is unknown exactly how much time the information was accessible, end quote. Again, that is from the sheriff's office. Now, California Attorney General Rob Bonta's office told law enforcement it is, quote unquote, working with urgency to determine the breach's scopes and plans to contact permit holders to directly advise them. Bonta's office will also institute a program to mitigate harm or damages that permit holders suffer as a result of this breach, according to the sheriff's office. Quote, we are investigating an exposure of individuals' personal information connected to the DOJ firearms dashboard. That's according to the Attorney General's office, their statement from their office. Quote, any unauthorized release of personal information is unacceptable. We are working swiftly to address the situation and will provide additional information as soon as possible. Now, obviously, California is considered pretty much a blue state. I'm not getting into politics here, but we may see potential backlash against basically concealed carry permit holders if that entire list gets leaked out into the public. On top of it, it now builds a roadmap for the theft of firearms, meaning, you know, you're a gang, you need to get guns. Why not case out a whole bunch of houses where there are concealed permits? Because odds are they're going to own guns. They go to work, you break into the house, you find the guns, boom, free stolen gun. That obviously is a huge, huge problem. So with that, that's all I've got for you, on that one, but it's a huge problem. So if you are a concealed carry permit holder in the state of California, you definitely want to check in with Attorney General Bonta's office. They may have information for you. And finally, we have to talk about China's worst data breach ever. Possibly their worst data breach ever, because here's what's going on. A database purportedly containing information of 1 billion Chinese residents has been listed for sale on breach forums for 10 Bitcoin, or approximately $200,000. $178,000. No, it's $210,000. You get what I'm saying? Total joke. Bitcoin, not stable. But 1 billion Chinese residents caught up in that. That is utterly massive. We are also talking about the most populous country in the world. So there you go. Now, that post attracted 177 replies and 300,000 views within hours. And the listing was posted a short time ago by an anonymous user going simply by China Dan. Quote, in 2022, the Shanghai National Police database was leaked. This database contains many terabytes of data and information on billions of Chinese citizens, according to the post. Quote, databases contain information on 1 billion Chinese national residents and several billion case records, including name, address, birthplace, national ID number, mobile number, all crime/case details. Now, the seller has provided what he claims is a sample data set with 750,000 files from the database. That's the sample. The sample is 750,000 records. That is probably the largest sample size I've seen for a data breach of that size. That is just bonkers. Now, obviously there's debate, is this legit or not? Many users that have actually seen this, looking at this saying, yeah, no, this is absolutely valid. And so overall, the consensus, while there is debate, the majority think this is actually legitimate. I think this is going to give us a really interesting insight into how the Chinese government operates, though. And I think that's one of those things that we don't see. As a very closed society, an authoritarian society, and the largest surveillance state in the world, what we understand from the legal system is that essentially you are guilty and you got to prove yourself innocent. That is obviously the reverse of here, where in the United States, you are innocent and the state has to prove your guilt. So here we are. But it's going to be really interesting to see what they categorize as a crime, how they're categorizing as a crime, what the punishments are, how they're tracking their people. Again, the largest surveillance state in the world, they are monitoring everything. So I think this will be a really interesting look for privacy and legal researchers. We'll see if it gets out there. But obviously, that is a huge black eye for the Chinese government. They pride themselves on their security. They pride themselves on their secrecy. I'm sure heads are going to roll. Hopefully not literally, over this one. And those were your breaches of the week. Were you affected? Well, if you're listening to me from China, you absolutely were.
You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM. And now for the Deep Dive segment, where we take a closer and deeper look at a cybersecurity, cyber warfare, or technology issue around us. And if you have any suggestions for a Deep Dive segment or something you'd like me to dive into, you can once again find me on Facebook and Twitter at Nick A. ESP. Again, that's Nick A. ESP. Or you can send an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. That's questions@securityfanatics.com. I am more than happy to take a look at it. And if it meets our standards, we are more than happy to do a deep dive on it. So let's begin.
And this week's deep dive is kind of near and dear to my heart. I'm entitling it, How Facebook is Going to Kill Society. You may already think they've killed it. You may not realize all of the things that are going on. You're also listening to the guy that did a video a few years back called It's Time to Put Mark Zuckerberg in Jail, where I list out, due to primary sources, a litany of sins over the years. But we have some new information here that I think is just beyond important. And while I'm going to do a 2.0 version of the It's Time to Put Mark Zuckerberg in Jail video and podcast, I actually think I even did on the radio show now that I'm thinking back in the day. This is obviously going to be one that I think is going to be added to that. But we're going to talk about how basically Facebook is going to kill society. And I think this is an important topic. And basically, anyone in the country, in a country that basically considers themselves a democracy or even an anocracy, really needs to consider a lot of what I'm going to be talking about here. Now, this was prompted basically by a recent article in Vice News, and I'm in the process of writing an article with a much larger footprint and context than the one that Vice did, but they really got me thinking on this one. And here's the primer for this discussion. It comes from David Gilbert of Vice News, who I think I'm going to be paraphrasing and quoting quite a bit here just in my notes as I'm talking to you, because it was really a good article, well written, that he had. And here's what's going on. In 2018, Mark Zuckerberg claimed that he cared about making sure Facebook wasn't used to do things like undermine democracy. And I quote Mr. Zuckerberg, "The most important thing I care about right now is making sure no one interferes in the various 2018 elections around the world." If you recall, Facebook is global. The United States is not the only one that obviously has elections that can be hindered or hampered or affected by Facebook and misinformation. Now, Zuckerberg also said basically during that marathon 5-hour testimony to Congress in April of that year, which was a disaster on the congressional side. It was just horrible questioning. I would have done it for free if they had just given me time with that man. I would have had him broken down. So basically, he was grilled in that, if you recall, about how the Kremlin weaponized Facebook during the 2016 election to spread disinformation and chaos. If you don't think that happened, you can actually go download and read all of the internet agencies' ads that essentially they put out there. Those have been fully curated, exhaustively explored. I mean, we even know the address of essentially where they were putting this stuff out from, meaning the actual physical building they were using in Moscow. It's crazy. Now, fast forward to 2022, and Zuckerberg really doesn't care anymore. He's more concerned, obviously, about money and now, obviously, his precious metaverse. Now, as the crucial midterm elections approach in the United States, two new reports give credence to the claim that Zuckerberg now really doesn't care about securing elections, and he cares a lot more about his shiny new project. Now, the New York Times reported about a week or two ago that basically Zuckerberg no longer meets regularly with his election team anymore, and his top priority is instead, obviously, the metaverse. Now, the report also revealed that the number of employees dedicated to monitoring election threats has basically been gutted from 300 full-time members in 2020 down to just 60. And when you are thinking about just how vast the U.S. election infrastructure is, and then you add on the vastness of every other election infrastructure that has elections going on, usually coinciding with the United States, or even in years that the United States doesn't have it, 300 people globally is like a drop in the bucket. They need 30,000. Just for that, I think, and on top of that, they're down to 60 right now. That's crazy. Now, as an example of how this outlook could allow election conspiracies to spread basically unchecked on the platform, the New York Times pointed out that Dinesh D'Souza's new film, 2000 Mules, racked up 430,000 engagements on Facebook this month. I'm actually going to do a deep dive into 2000 Mules. If you know how GPS cell phone tracking essentially works, it flies in the face of what he is trying to claim in that movie. I just shook my head the first time I saw it. I'm like, he is crafting a narrative that does not fit how technology works. It's, you know, or even the election laws in the states he's claiming. But again, I digress from there. That is considered misinformation by all accounts, and basically Facebook let it go unchecked. Now, tracking how disinformation spreads on Facebook can also be a very difficult task, but a tool called CrowdTangle, which Facebook purchased in 2018, has now become a critical way for researchers and journalists alike to track new disinformation trends around elections. Facebook, which has historically been averse to sharing information with researchers, looks like they're going to be phasing out this tool as well. So that's awesome. They're cutting their election staff. They're not giving the researchers the information they need to check and look at disinformation and misinformation. This is, he just doesn't care. Now, the shutdown of the CrowdTangle platform began last year, with most former employees leaving or being assigned to roles in other parts of Meta. Obviously, that's the new name of Facebook. Now, in January of this year, Meta paused the ability of new users to register for CrowdTangle, and that's a hold that's still in place. No new features have been added in the last 16 months, and researchers have reported that the tool isn't working as expected. The reason for this, according to a Bloomberg report the same week as the New York Times, is that fewer than 5 engineers on Facebook's London integrity team were working to keep CrowdTangle operational. They are shutting down the critical tools and the critical processes that we need to stop the flow of demonstrably fake information. This is nuts. This also means that there's now very little support for many organizations that use CrowdTangle. That's a tool that's also used by journalists, researchers, academics, human rights organizations, and places like Myanmar, which literally saw a genocide fueled by disinformation on Facebook, and Sri Lanka, where also they were accused of facilitating a genocide, Facebook was. So this is obviously a huge problem. And researchers are obviously fearing that things are going to get worse coming into November in these very hotly contested midterm elections here in the United States. A spokesperson for Meta told Bloomberg that CrowdTangle would work for the 2022 midterms, just as it did for the 2020 elections, including the president, adding that the company has plans to, quote unquote, make an even more valuable tool for researchers, though they did not elaborate on those tools or when they would be available. But as one expert pointed out, the replacement system proposed by Facebook so far is not up to snuff. Now, Dr. Rebecca Tromble, she is the director of the Institute for Data, Democracy, and Politics, tweeted this out about a week ago or so, and I quote, "The system proposed to replace CrowdTangle is so far terrible, but most importantly, it's inaccessible to journalists who are the bulwark for public accountability and democracy. If I can access CrowdTangle and journalists can't, we all lose." And that is a very good point. Journalists keep the government honest. A free press is essential. And anybody undermining the free press is essentially not understanding that. They're an authoritarian, in my view, or they have autocratic tendencies. That's a huge, huge problem. The press keeps us honest. I know people are going to shake their heads. I don't want hate mail on it. I'm probably going to get it, but let's continue. Now, the U.S. midterms are just one election taking place this year. Obviously, most Americans, very American-centric, think about this, but across the globe, there are dozens of others that remain vulnerable to disinformation that is being shared on Facebook. And aside from elections, there are numerous other events which CrowdTangle could be used on how to track dangerous narratives that are being shared online. So, for example, Marc Andre Argentino, an extremism researcher and PhD candidate at Concordia, also tweeted about this, and I quote, "This tool was crucial to the analysis of COVID-19 information, threats from the Boogaloo Boys following the death of George Floyd, hybrid threats, etc. So many colleagues, journalists, and researchers benefit greatly from CrowdTangle." Now, Facebook has almost 3 billion monthly users, and for hundreds of millions of Americans, Facebook is still the primary way they communicate online and their main source of news and information. And that is one of the things I've talked about, where you have this inner circle of your friends, you like your friend, you trust your friend basically posts false information that seems to align with, let's say, their viewpoint. You trust that friend and say, oh my gosh, you know, he or she is onto something. I better share that too. And this is how these things spread. It's a huge, huge problem. And with the midterms approaching, Facebook and Zuckerberg's focus on making money in the metaverse is obviously a very worrying development. They need to basically be able to walk and chew gum here, meaning if they want to work on the metaverse, that's great. But if they are not doing anything to curb misinformation, disinformation, they're going to make it 1,000 times worse. Now, on top of all of this, there's also recent news that Facebook was violating your healthcare privacy in conjunctions with hospitals all over the United States. Essentially, researchers took the Newsweek's top 100 hospital systems in the United States and basically went looking for essentially Facebook code embedded into the websites, and 33 or one third of the top 100 hospitals, not to mention probably a zillion smaller healthcare facilities and hospitals and all of this, had something in their websites known as MetaPixel. Now, I bring this up to say that if you go to one of these hospitals' website to, let's say, you know, make an appointment. Oh, I need to go, I don't know, see my gastroenterologist because I think I have a kidney stone. And you're laying all of these things out on this site. Basically, the pixel, this tracking pixel from Meta, was taking that information that, okay, I'm Nick. I just made a appointment with Dr. Smith, a gastroenterologist, for this, like for kidneys or whatever it is. And then boom, it's getting sent to Facebook. Facebook was actually collecting this. There is no working consent between the hospitals and the and Facebook. And so Facebook and the hospital that you've been using are potentially, if your hospital is doing this, is violating your privacy on the healthcare side by giving this information to Facebook. And Facebook is collecting this, and they were totally fine with it for obvious reasons. Facebook is one of the largest data miners in the world. That is such a huge problem. Here's what's going on with this. And finally, we also have to talk about social media platforms in general, because they are becoming targets for political machinations and laws that are helping to drive a wedge even further into society. And obviously, that is essentially another way that Facebook is essentially going to help kill society. They are allowing disinformation and misinformation to go unchecked again. They are collecting information on you, but now they are basically targeted in politics. And while that's not necessarily their fault, it is kind of their fault, and here's what's going on. And let's start with the backdrop on this, because a surprise ruling a couple of weeks ago by a panel of 3 federal appeals court judges allowed Texas social media law to go into effect. This has led to basically panic befuddlement among tech policy experts, wondering how on earth platforms like Facebook could possibly comply, even if they wanted to, and what options the services have for challenging the ruling. Now, these judges ruled 2-1 that the law should be effective while they hear an appeal by 2 big tech trade groups of a district court injunction that initially put this measure on hold. The judges did not immediately publish their reasoning, but the move will force social media companies to face a legal environment that could threaten the core, basically, could threaten their core content bans, moderation practices, and ranking algorithms that have allowed them to flourish since the 1990s. And here, basically, is the nuts and bolts of that. With HB or House Bill 20 now into effect, Texas users can sue platforms like Facebook or Twitter or take your pick if they believe they've gotten quote-unquote censored for their viewpoints. This is essentially a vague premise. This was politically motivated. It was designed by basically the Republican Party and the conservatives in the Texas State House to claim that big tech unfairly silences them and downranks their content. We'll talk about that in a second. Now, until that week, industry observers widely expected the court to uphold the block on this law. In addition to the lower court's injunctions on a different federal court, they also paused a similar Florida law, finding that it violated the First Amendment in seeking to punish private companies for their views and treatment of content. Those decisions also echoed extensive Supreme Court precedent, not that apparently that matters anymore. And to quote, "But instead, the Fifth Circuit judges appeared to struggle with basic tech concepts during a Monday hearing, including whether Twitter counts as a website, before issuing Wednesday's startling decision." Now, Matt Schruers, who is the president of the Computer and Communications Industry Association, that's one of those two big groups that is challenging the law, said in a statement that, quote, no option is off the table as far as challenging the ruling and the statutes. A lawyer for NetChoice, that's the other big one, said that they will absolutely be appealing this. Now, one option for these groups is to seek what is known as an en banc or en banc appeal, basically a rehearing by a larger panel of judges on the same court instead of three, I believe it's seven, which basically would, possibly change up the rule. This particular circuit, though, is considered the most conservative circuit in the United States. But the decision a couple weeks ago may signal that even a larger group would come into basically a similar conclusion. And that's according to David Green, a civil liberties director at the Electronic Frontier Foundation. Now, the EFF supports platform suits in this brief. The law is unconstitutional, according to Green. And I quote, my hope is that at some point, a court will agree with that and strike the law down. But I think that's only going to happen at the Supreme Court level. Now, there are two ways that companies could end up at the Supreme Court here. They could skip the en banc hearing and start appealing the Supreme Court directly, or they could try to bring the case thereafter, another loss in appeals court. But the majority of the nine justices on the Supreme Court might not see a reason to jump in at this stage and could instead hold for a time when the companies actually start facing lawsuits permitted by the Texas statute. So basically, this is reinforcing the wedge between the right and the left to the point where the right appears to be trying to make punitive laws against what they perceive as censorship, even though multiple, and I've talked about this before, academic studies have concluded that posts that are politically right-leaning on Facebook by far get the most virality and spread the most. Meaning, this is now a wedge issue for politicians to say, we need to create our own social media platforms. We need to move to Parler and True Social and all that because the Facebooks of the world are censoring us when the opposite appears to be demonstrably true. Now, on top of that, this law, essentially, one, is now dictating essentially to Facebook what they can and cannot consider censorship, which is something that basically has traditionally flown in the face of the pro-business party that was the Republican Party. But they don't like the politics, potentially, of Facebook, and here we are.
And thank you so much for tuning in this week. It was another fun show, and I think we covered a lot of really good stuff, and I hope you guys enjoyed it as much as I did. It was a really good time, and I hope you keep tuning in. Thank you very much for listening to the Deep Dive Radio Show here with Nick Espinoza. And if you have any comments, suggestions, questions, absolutely anything, once again, you can find me on Facebook and Twitter at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. And you can always send an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. Don't be shy. I love the feedback. We've been having a great time with the show. And as always, stay safe and stay online, everyone. Thanks for listening.